Let's make it happen, Captain!
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. All right, Gov, what's new today? Anything?
Oh, we got, an animated picture of Bing that is of a wheat thresher thingy.
Yeah, that not making a whole lot of progress.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of disconcerting. It should at least move, you know,
a little bit. By the time the show is done, he is going to have that wheat into, like, a mulch. Very nice. All right, let's get started. First comment was from the last show, the show before last, because I put the last show up last night. But Magic Andre, we were talking about...
How many times can you say the word last in, you know, one block of...
Well, it'd be two lasts ago.
Two lasts ago.
So Magic Andre, 1981, we were talking about making title bars smaller in Windows 8, which someone said, how do I do that?
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of said, well, there's not really a way to do that. But Magic Andre is correct that you can make the title bar smaller by going to the display properties and setting the title bar text. Yeah, there you go. You can set the title bar text smaller. It's at 11 now. The thing is, though, and this is why I didn't mention this, if you set that to like 6, which I think is the lowest setting that you can possibly do, you gain 3 pixels. So,
and things kind of look anemic in the title bar.
Yeah, and then your title bar is kind of, you know, you're going to be squinting to see what is going on there. So,
I come from the Lollipop Guild.
Yeah. It's, I don't know if small text is worth 3 pixels, but, you know, it's an option if you want to do that. So there's that. And then Yakko Warner, he said in the show that I posted yesterday, so that's the last show, just so you're following along here. He said, well, since you asked, how do I get Microsoft cordless phone to run in something more recent than Windows 98? Which got us talking about that this morning. Because I was a big fan of the Microsoft cordless phone system until this morning when we started having this discussion. let's look at this. This is the actual site for the old Microsoft cordless phone system.
Way back when.
Way back. So let's get on our Wayback Machine rat hole.
Yeah, this was a whole, moving from topic to topic to topic, like trying to figure out, well, this thing is... What, 14 years old?
Yeah, now. It's old.
Like, how do we get good information, or at least the original information? God only knows how many times Wikipedia has been rewritten over.
Yeah.
Right? So, for those of you that don't know about it, the Wayback Machine, Internet Wayback Machine...
Archive.org.
...is very cool to see, you know, how the web has evolved over the years, and, like, how quickly things have changed in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
Taking a look at, say, Microsoft.com, you know, we have this heat map of changes. It only apparently goes back to 1996, which is still pretty reasonable when you talk about indexing the web.
And there's an interesting online piece. I can't for the life of me remember where it is that talks about what goes into capturing the internet at different periods of
time. Talk about petabytes of data.
Yeah, and at the time, and this had to have been like, oh, close to 10 years ago, they were talking about how it just took an enormous amount of space for them to do this, which I imagine now that's probably, well, it's probably more enormous because they're capturing even more now, but very interesting what goes on with getting all this.
It looks like back then they weren't perhaps capturing the embedded pictures.
Yeah.
Or they had some issues with embedded pictures. But, I mean, this was the Microsoft.com website back in 1996.
Yeah, and I'm okay with them not getting images because I can imagine what that would take to get all the images, too. I mean, it's good that they even have the text. And sometimes there are images. I mean, you see the IE, the old IE icon there.
Right.
But, yeah, we were looking up the old White House site and stuff like that, whitehouse.gov, and they had an animated GIF flag, which I thought was LOL. That's so funny.
Hello.
They do that. Nice. But anyway, back to the Microsoft phone system. So in case you don't know about the phone, it was just a cordless phone.
Just a cordless phone.
Pretty much a cordless phone, but it had some incredible features for the time. Mm-hmm. For starters, it hooked up to Outlook.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have your phone calls come in. The coolest part, I thought, was it would play a custom ringtone for anyone who calls based on their caller ID. So Gov calls me, and it plays, you know, Brick House or something. So it was just really cool that you could set that up. And then
I want the Imperial March theme.
I would give it to you. I would give it to you. So, you have a custom ringtone, and then when you leave a message, it would save as a wave attachment in email in your Outlook, which was cool. And, you know, I guess you could set up rules to, like, forward those and stuff now. Nowadays, it's not that critical. I mean, I get my my answering machine through Comcast, you know, through a package deal, and I think I can log on to that from here now. Not that I know how to do it, but, right. You know, in theory, I could. So
you gotta imagine, like, this was running on 9X.
Yeah.
You know, 14 years ago. And we had some of these ideas well before, you know, the cell systems, cable systems.
Well, that was
them.
The interesting thing, too, because when I was thinking about this morning, after I read that comment, I was thinking, you know, it's funny that this is kind of like what we get and we just take for granted through Link now. If you're a Microsoft employee and I call Gove at his desk, the first thing that happens is Link will pop up and say, someone's calling you. Mm-hmm. What do you want to do? Do you want to send it to voicemail? Do you want to send it to your cell phone? Do you want to, you know, send it to some other phone? You can set up some different options in there. So, and the other thing, too, is people will call me at my desk at work, and I'll just answer on my cell phone wherever I am, which yep. is incredibly nice. But the other thing it does, too, is if you leave a voicemail message, it gets attached to an email that you get as a Microsoft employee. And the really nice thing is it does some transcription in there so that you can read the message, which works a lot better than you would think. You can even listen to it, too, because it's an attachment. So, very cool. But if you wanted to do this, we were talking about this morning, the first thing you would need to do, because this was a serial port device, is you would need to get an adapter for serial DB9 to USB.
Yep.
And then, what, run Windows 98 in a VM?
In a VM.
All right. And then you connect your adapter with this on it to that. You pass that through to the VM. And you say, you know, use this USB device. I found there is an adapter that I found this morning. It's 4-port USB DB9 serial solution for Windows 98. So it does have drivers for Windows 98, and so you could make that work. And then, you know, run mail.
I mean, I did a similar thing back with some BlackBerry devices that had a serial-only connection. And some like really, really, really old device that only had drivers and software for the 9X.
Yeah.
So it should work pretty much the same way.
Yeah. So I don't know. I kind of want to try it now, but I think I'm just going to be disappointed, and I'd like to keep the good memories that I already have of the Microsoft cordless phone system. The one thing that I didn't like about this, which I always wondered, how did this happen? But it had a speakerphone mm-hmm. built into it where you could do speakerphone, but you could only hear. You couldn't talk. I know. And I was like, really? It's like,
it kind of defeats the purpose.
So cool, but, and at the time, now it's common, you think, you know, oh, your phone, you hit the speakerphone button, you sat down. This did not exist back then. This was like new, and I was like, oh, that's the coolest thing, but you could only listen. It couldn't hear you, but yeah, there you go. All right, next question from Roger. He says, first I want to tell you this is one of the best shows on Channel 9. I'm going to tell Laura Foy you said that. Especially Let's Make It Happen, Captain. They love you, Gove. The problem I have, dual boot of Windows 7 and Ubuntu. I messed up and deleted my Ubuntu partition from Windows to remove Ubuntu. Of course, I don't know how to reset the bootloader of Windows because Grub no longer exists. So I did that using Windows Repair CD, using commands bootrec, fix MBR, bootrec, fix boot. For the first try, which didn't work, and then bootsec NT60sys MBR/MBR for the second try, which also didn't work. My laptop is rebooting after Windows logo swirl a little bit. I don't know what's wrong. Tried repair from CD, which couldn't do anything. I'm wondering if there's a way to repair Windows, which is reinstallation, which is without doing a reinstallation, which is a painful choice for me. You said, can you try a bootsec /NT60/all?
Yeah, that'll work for all the partitions. The other thing you can do is boot from the setup DVD.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll get an initial splash screen where you hit next. When you hit next, do Shift F10, which will bring up a CMD window, and then run disk part.
Yeah.
And then make sure that the partition that you're trying to boot from is active.
Yeah.
If you had, for whatever reason, an EFI-based system, and the EFI-based information also was on the Ubuntu partition, and that got blown away, you're in a slightly more painful world.
Yeah.
You'd have to actually rebuild the, not the partition table or anything, but you'd have to recreate a partition, an EFI partition. You'd have to use BCD edit to add the the boot information, like which partition, which EFI file that you're booting from. There's some TechNet articles on this. You can probably respond in the show notes about like very specific set of steps in order to try to recover that.
Cool. Okay. All right. Next from DJ from Yakko Warner in the comments. He says, in Windows 7 on the network control panel page, it shows all the adapters. Can't recall the full path offhand. There appears to be a toolbar button that brings up advanced adapter settings, and that is a dialog box that allows me to reorder priority of network adapters on my machine. I've used this on my home and work laptops. For some reason, Windows 7 likes to put wireless adapters first, and I'd rather have the wired adapter first so it uses a faster connection when I'm docked and plugged in. But on Windows 8 and control panel network and internet network connections, there's no such button to hit. How do I find this dialog box and ensure that Windows 8 will use my wired Ethernet controller first over Wi-Fi adapters?
So in order to get to this magic page about reordering adapters, just right-click in the notification area to the Network and Sharing Center. Go to Change Adapter Settings. Notice this dialog is Win 8, but it also applies to Win 7. By default, the menu items aren't shown, so you have to hit Alt, go to Advanced, go to Advanced Settings. And here are your adapters and bindings, where you can actually reset your default order.
Nice.
So if you wanted to, you can move Ethernet up. And that's really
very
all you
cool.
have to do.
Nice. All right.
So there are other methods as well. Like if you wanted to go into your Wi-Fi connection, go to Properties. No, my machine is actually not all that slow. I've handicapped it in order to reduce the amount of battery that it uses. You can go to your IPv4 protocol stack. You can go to advanced. You can undo automatic metric, change your interface metric to a lower number will be higher priority, a higher number will be a lower priority.
Okay.
So you can reorder based on that as well.
I like the up and down arrows better.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah. This is a little bit more esoteric.
Yeah.
Certain situations would call for it, but otherwise go with the other method.
Yeah. Okay. Next question from Brian. It says, what's the easiest way to delete old Windows folder in a new install of Windows 8?
Disk cleanup wizard. Just go to the start menu, search for disk cleanup.
Elevated.
Elevated will get rid of the Windows old. However, what you might not be aware of is that after 28 days, it will run it for you. It'll mm-hmm. clean up automatically. And if you run to less than 10% of free space, it'll start cleaning up at that point as well.
Wow.
So generally speaking, you don't need to do anything. Leave it alone. And magically after 28 days.
I did not know that, 28 days. I'm kind of nitpicky about that kind of thing, so I wouldn't have waited the 28 days. So
yeah, I mean, we do
done
it,
something proactive.
We do it as a precaution, right? Just in case, you need to recover something, some mm-hmm. particular file. It will not get rid of user settings, however.
Cool. Okay. So this one's from Larry. It says, in Windows 7, you'd start the snipping tool and be ready to capture a screen. Now it just starts the app. Is there a way to start it like new was already clicked as well as launch? Thank you. By the way, I have a Gov shrine in my server closet. Thank you, Larry. That was very kind of you. So, snipping tool in Windows 8, it's a little bit different. It used to be when you started, it's ready to snip.
Mm-hmm.
And now when you started, it's ready to click new to snip.
And that was due to customer feedback. There was certain workflows that people were using the snipping tool for where having it automatically start was actually causing them issues.
Yeah.
So we decided, well, here's actual feedback that says we'd like it a different way, so we set it to be a different way, and just clicking on new is actually pretty reasonable.
But there's no switch I can add to my icon or anything that has it ready to... No. Okay. All right. Next question. Also from Larry. Wow. He says, when I'm in the Windows Store off the start screen and I install Windows 8 apps, where do those get installed on my hard drive? I'm concerned that they're all being installed on C, which is an SSD, and I prefer to have it on D, which is a bigger drive. By the way, love the show. Gov is the best. What's
crazy up with people.
This? Yeah, Larry. All right.
So I have to worry about Larry.
Yeah. Big fan of yours. So, yeah, so when you install Windows 8 apps, is there any way to have those go to the other drive, or are they, do they go to the C?
They go to the C, program files, Windows apps. For the time being, that's kind of where they have to go.
Yeah.
Also kind of have to understand that Windows Store apps are considerably smaller than regular apps that might be installed, generally speaking.
So it's not the CS Master Collection, CS6.
Right.
Okay.
So for the time being, anyways, they have to go to that location. We are always looking at what we might need to customize in the future based on customer need.
Okay, cool. All right, from Ben, it says, for a long time now, I've been trying to get Microsoft make a few changes in Windows I think is needed, and they are the following. All error messages from software vendors, including Microsoft, should make their error messages, which are displayed on the screen, copyable, meaning that we users should be able to select the text of the error messages, copy it, and have that available to post to forums, tech support, and the like. Your answer to that, first of all...
I agree with you.
Preaching to the choir here, buddy.
I would love for that to happen.
Yeah.
In fact, I would love to have a little button on the dialogue that says, you know, copy, send, you know...
copy to email or something.
Copy to email. You know, there's a lot of things that that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
In fact, most message boxes in Windows, if it's just using Message Box API, you can do Control-C and get all that information out anyways.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, we can't force anybody to create their dialog boxes that way so that you can
And we can't force even Microsoft to do that as much as we like to think we can.
Yeah, and frankly, you know, the error messages, it doesn't really do a lot of good to have really verbose error messages.
Yeah.
You know, we're supposed to have something that is actionable for the user, that gives them some information to, you know, go do something, you know, get a little bit more information, but having a ton of information there, technical information for a user, might not actually be the most helpful, which is why we prefer them to go to the event logs, because they have richer information like timestamps, other additional information that might be tied to it. Like if you just get a message box and you dismiss it, you're kind of like, well, okay, what happened? Where is that information stored?
Yeah, and typically someone who's troubleshooting that machine would use the error logs anyway to find that kind of stuff. So, you know, a displayed message might not be the best method for them anyway. So there's a second part of this. It says, also in IE on the desktop, when you bring down the favorites menu item and delete a link, favorites collapse again. This should not be. Favorites should stay up so that we can do more stuff while it's open. Okay, yeah. I could see that as well. That would be kind of nice.
Oddly enough, though, I couldn't repro it. So
well,
if you bring
see.
Up the...
So right-click and delete one of those.
Yeah.
There you have it. All right.
So, I'd love to be able to repro it, but I can't repro that particular problem.
I've had my own suggestions for IE. I'd like to have... A modifier so that when I drag a favicon to the desktop, I can do not the pin site, but just an internet shortcut on the desktop. I'd like to see like some notification of which tab has sound in it, so that when a commercial kicks up or something, then I know which one to go and mute or which tab to nuke. But yeah, thanks for the comments, and we can always forward those on. So anything like that, you know, feel free to send it to us. All right, from Dion, he says, I recently bought two new, this is a weird one, I bought two new Western Digital USB 3 hard drives. Whenever I plug in both the drives straight into USB on the motherboard, the one will be hidden and inaccessible. I tried changing the drive letter on each drive, but this doesn't seem to work. You asked, is anything banged out in the device manager? And he wrote back and said, yeah, two devices are banged out, the NVIDIA stereo controller and unknown device located on PCI Express Root Complex. The strange thing is that these are two 1 terabyte drives, and he has another 500 gig drive that works fine with either of the 1 terabyte drives plugged in. Very bizarre.
Very, very bizarre. I mean, there's a couple of things, you know, if they don't have external power, it's possible that the motherboard isn't supplying enough power to power both the drives. They might need firmware updates. That could be the driver on the USB 3 controller because Windows 7 doesn't have native USB 3 support. As it requires an additional driver. I mean, there's a few different things to try. I actually at least attempted to find these particular Western Digital drives in our device test lab. Found two of them, plugged them into USB 3 on Win 7. It worked, but I don't know the exact specifics of this particular configuration. It could have been, like I say, bad firmware on the drives themselves. Motherboard might need a BIOS update. I could not repro this particular problem.
So the first thing I would try is any other computer, plug both of them in, and see if both those drives work.
Right.
And then if that's the case, then what driver for the USB? Check out the motherboard and see if you can find a driver for the USB on that.
An updated one, anyways.
Yeah. And if that ends up being the case and you can't fix that, then maybe like a, and I hate to tell you to go try something so extreme, but like an add-on card for USB 3, put that
the
in the motherboard.
Or the other thing would be plug into two USB 2 ports.
Yeah.
You know, that's the really simple one. You're likely to have two USB 2 ports. If it works on that one, then Windows is working properly. It's probably the driver.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. Next question. Is there a way to see a list of programs that have been uninstalled in a Windows 7 machine?
The answer to that would be yes and no. We don't have complete control over what is an install and what is an uninstall.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, when you uninstall a piece of software, all traces of it should go away.
Ideally, it should be gone. Yeah.
It should be gone. Now, if you have an MSI-based install, a Windows Installer-based install, you can go to the event log, and it will actually keep a record in the event of, you know, X particular product got reconfigured, got installed, got uninstalled.
Yeah.
So you can go look that up. There's no easy list. There's no, like, consolidated list of things that got uninstalled.
Yeah.
But, you know, the event log would be probably the best way, or if you have any other piece of software installer, that would write to the event log.
Okay. Cool. All right, next question. I've got a multi-touch app running in a web browser on a Windows 7 tablet. Part of its functionality requires touch and hold, single touch. The app already has its own feedback indicator for this gesture, but the OS ring appears around the finger when holding after about 1 second. Not sure if this is Samsung or the OS. Is there a way to get rid of this? Yeah, this is actually the OS. This is the right-click indicator for Windows 7. It's a circle that when you hold your finger on a touch machine for a little bit, the circle comes around. When it completes, it means that you've right-clicked. The way to get rid of this is to click on the Start button, go to the Control Panel, go to Pen and Touch, which you won't see unless you have Pen and Touch on your computer. And in the Pen and Touch dialog on Pen Options tab, which it should open up to, there's a function called Press and Hold. Just uncheck this box, click OK. There you have it. That will get rid of that for you.
But do know that is a global change.
Yeah.
That's not a per-app change.
Yeah. All right, so next question. My laptop's internal hard drive is a bit slow. I looked at the drive properties, and there's two options. Enable write caching on the drive on the device and turn off Windows write cache buffer flushing on the device. As you can see, the first option is checked already, but the second option isn't. I've heard that the second option can really speed things up. It also sounds very risky. Is it safe to do on a laptop that rarely is off of AC power and still has battery?
So let's take a look at what he's actually talking about in Device Manager. See if I have that option. Under disk drives, this is my drive. It's under policies. And yes, you know, here are the two options. Second one is turned off. Yeah, go ahead, check it. You know, it will give a performance boost. But the thing that you'll probably really want to do first is do a WinSat disk assessment.
Yeah.
Before checking this off, get the assessment, check it, reboot, do another assessment, see what your perf difference is. You know, there are some potential drawbacks. If you do lose power, you have a data loss potential.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's a laptop drive, so potentially a 5400 RPM disk, spinning platter. Bump it up to an SSD is going to get you a far, far better perf improvement than doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it is slow, the cheaper solution potentially would be adding a ReadyBoost drive. You know, that's super duper cheap and may give you a noticeable perf improvement.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. Pick of the week time. Pick of the week. And today we want to talk about Unreal 3 Engine running on Windows RT. Ooh, sweetness. Here we go. So this is Citadel, I believe is the name of this application. It's the Unreal 3 Engine. It's not the mobile version. This is
the full PC version.
Yeah, this is This is an engine right here. This is some sweetness. And, yeah, so you can go through, kind of walk through this and see some very fine graphics here. Look at the mirror finish on that floor. Very nice. Now, explain WinRT for those who may not know, which I can't imagine would be too many people, but what is the significance of this video?
The Windows RT is still Windows 8, but yeah. It's designed for Windows on ARM. So this is, I believe, running a Tegra 3, an NVIDIA Tegra 3 chip.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a standard ARM device. It's a 32-bit operating system.
Yeah.
It is extremely power efficient. You know, it's designed around the entire modern app experience, the Windows Store app experience.
So it is completely likely that this is the kind of game that you could see from the Windows Store.
Oh, absolutely.
That you can run on an ARM device like this, which is incredibly interesting. So, yeah, there you have it.
I mean, this just opens up.
It's coming.
This just opens up a world of possibilities in terms of existing game ports.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. All right, and that's the show for this week. If you want to write us, you can send email to defragshow@microsoft.com. You can leave comments in the show notes, but if you have a problem, we prefer email so we can do a little bit of back and forth.
Yeah, screen caps, screenshots, logs.
Problem step recorder.
Problem step recorder is extremely handy for this kind of stuff.
Very nice. Yeah, and how to do that is in the show notes. So just look at that. See you next week.
Thanks.
Thank you.